jump back.
Yeah.
1935-ish or so.
Why? Germany?
Yes.
Okay. The first thing I noticed was not only that that one kid beat me up a little bit, but it could have been for something else, that some teachers came to school in uniform with their...
Right.
And you had to stand up when they came in. He came in, clicked his heels on the podium. All the teachers at the podium, he clicked his heels. Heil Hitler. Class had to follow. Of course we followed.
Right. Do you remember the rallies? Because we've both been to Nuremberg and been on the field. And we've talked with people who have been there.
We weren't there. We stayed home.
Okay. Because we know somebody who was there as a young boy,
Didn't go. The thing that disturbed me more than anything else, not that I couldn't swim in winter in the, or all the movies, all this didn't disturb me. What disturbed me, that was our live-in maid, who was there before I was born, had to leave. Because one of the laws suddenly came up, if there is a man in the household, then no maid under the age of, let's say, 65, it could have been 60, is allowed to work for the Jewish household. Bang. That maid was closer to me than my mother. She brought us up, besides doing everything else. We had a problem, we went to her, not to my mother, who had other things to do. And that was like losing mother. And it got to me psychologically, I didn't know that word. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I cried when somebody talked to me. My parents weren't, they didn't know about that. It was horrible.
One of the things that we always like to hear is the story post-war.
Can I just ask one question before that? The time when you're working for the resistance, and your brother too, any examples where they were really close calls, where you almost got caught?
Other than the town, I know that, but
anything else that happened?
Mm-mm. Not to me.
Not to you. What about your brother?
No.
No. Okay.
No. And he, from there, joined the French army.
Okay.
When, where were we?
So now the war is over. What's going on with your parents?
My parents left. Okay, my parents stayed in southern France, where they were. Only they lived, they moved to something nicer, and my mother went constantly to Marseille, which was closer than Paris. There were only two American consulates. We were coming here. I mean, that was the idea. Oh, we had lots of relatives by then here. We had our affidavits. I had an uncle here. But you had to go to a consulate and stand in line. I mean, you know all those things. And Marseille was much closer to Paris, so my mother did that constantly, back and forth and back and forth. I stayed in Paris. I left from Paris. My parents left from southern France. We didn't all leave at the same time.
When did you each leave?
Excuse me?
When did you leave and when did your parents
leave? I left in January 47.
And your parents?
They left later in May.
And your brother?
With me.
Okay.
It was again my grandmother, my brother, my aunt, and I. The four of us got the papers at the same time.
Okay.
To get the paper, it was like a joke, but it wasn't a joke. The exit visa that you needed from France was good for 3 months. Then it expired, you had to start all over again in Marseille.
Right.
Or in Paris. The coming in visa here also was good for 3 months.
Oh boy.
And once you maybe got it, you had no transportation. Because the war in Indochina, Indochina, had just happened. All the available ships went to Indochina. We couldn't swim.
Right.
So what was the trip like over?
I have not been and will not be on a boat. That was, if you wanted, 10 days. 10 whole days in January. No crackers, I didn't know that you could eat crackers and feel better. Mm-hmm. No Dramamine. Nothing. How would I know? I'd never been a big boat. That was a boat. It was a converted troop transport where everybody on the boat slept together in one huge place down as you can go. By the time it was time for breakfast, which you had to go up for, I sat there. Before it was in front of me, I was outside on deck. I must have lost, I don't know how much weight.
Okay, so you arrive in New York?
Yes, on the 29th of January.
And
I arrive in New York.
Are you?
I don't get up. No.
Do you see the Statue of Liberty? Do you go to Ellis Island?
No, it was no more Ellis Island. But I was supposed to be picked up by somebody I was badly in love with, but he wasn't in love with me. But he was a brother of the boy who was in the car with us when we left in the Chrysler Paris. There was the same family.
Right.
He was my age, Peter. And Peter had been here for a while, and he had gotten married, which I absolutely resented. And his wife's name was Lori, just like mine, spelled the same way. But he said he would pick me up, and I had met him in Paris once before. The best-looking guy, and in uniform even better. Anyway, everybody in my office drooled when he picked me up. And he was married, and his family stayed here. And, I mean, I knew that, you know, we were very close friends.
Right.
And he was going to pick me up at the boat. And there was another problem because when the officers came up to the boat for all the paperwork, and of course everybody on the boat needed the paperwork, and when it was my turn, I spoke English fluently. And those, they said, where do all these things come from? Through the screens?
I don't know.
There's something flying around.
Yeah.
Not to me. Yeah. They don't want me. Yeah.
Well, you own this place. We're visitors.
So the officers, the American officers who sit there getting everybody's papers, and they come to me and I speak English, and everybody else who speaks Polish and you name it, they said, could you help us here?
Right.
It will go a lot faster. So I figured, sure, I'll help for a few, and then what? It was to the end. I was the last person on the damn boat. And I didn't figure that he would wait for me. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the morning, he waited for me. I was supposed to stay with my mother's cousins in Washington Heights.
Right.
My friend took me. It was a convertible. It was closed. It was January, but I had never seen a convertible. And he drove me up George Washington Bridge. It was amazing. And we went to Riverside Drive. And he parked his car, and we went upstairs in the elevator, and we rang the bell, 1 o'clock in the morning, and there was no answer. So we rang again and again and again, there was no answer. He stayed with me. At 2 o'clock in the morning, they come in. I mean, my mother's generation, and they were at their son-in-law's birthday party, and since I wasn't there at 11 o'clock
when
at night, they think, of course, I would never come.
Right.
So that was my arrival.
So when did you meet your husband?
Much later.
Okay. Oh, wait, so what did you do now? You're in New York.
I'm in New York. I'm living in their, they have a couch made up in their dining room. The next morning, I sleep late, like until 9 o'clock maybe, but she sleeps later. I mean, it's my mother's generation. He was already gone. He was an attorney. And he was even they came from Germany too, from Nuremberg. Right. But he had done his whatever, and he was an attorney. And she was still in bed and asleep. And I said, I need to get a job. Where is there an agency I can go to find a job? So that was 10 o'clock in the morning when I had arrived. And she says, well, I tell you the address. And she writes something down somewhere downtown on 4th Avenue. That's all I remember.
Okay.
And she said, you won't have any trouble. There's a subway in Paris. You know how to get on a subway. So if you can do it in Paris, you can do it here. You speak English.
Go to it.
Wow, okay. I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm. I did. But by 10 or 10:30 in the morning on 157th, West 157th Street, the IRT at the time, I go down, and I don't know that there are so many exits or whatever, and that where I go down, it's the closest from where I came from, there is no booth. And there is nobody else there. And there is a subway coming, and the next subway, and the next subway, and there is this gate that I do not know how to get through.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Until finally somebody comes in with an attaché case, and I say stupidly, excuse me, how did you get through there now? And he said, what do you mean, how did you get through there? Don't you have a nickel? My English was good, but what's a nickel? Mm-hmm. They don't teach you that in Paris,
right,
you know?
Right, of course.
So he told me what a nickel was. He didn't give me one.
Whoa!
He didn't. He said, go upstairs and look over there across the street. And then go down, go up first, go across the street, go down again, and there's a booth, you can buy a nickel. I bought a nickel. I think more than one. And I went downtown, and I got a job right on the spot.
What kind of job?
French, English, and German.
Oh.
And I worked for two young cousins who were way downtown on North Moore Street or somewhere like that, who were importing frames for glasses. And they came from Belgium, the frames, not they.
Right.
Didn't speak a word of French. There was just these two young cousins and two girls who came at 9 o'clock in the morning, spent the first half hour in the bathroom taking their curlers out of their hair before they came and to their desk. I mean, that was such an eye-opening for me.
Different world.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And all I did was they told me what to write.
Mm-hmm.
There was no I mean, if you tried to do it on the telephone, you stayed there all day until you got,
right.
Couldn't get there. They asked me what to write. I didn't even have to take dictation. And when the answer came back, I told them what they wrote.
Wow.
And then I found a job that paid better. This paid home. The check I got every week was $32. Well, it's different money.
Right. That time was...
That's a lot of money.
That was a lot of money.
You could live.
Right.
Not great.
$32 a week.
Well, I rented... My room, please. The room I rented was $10 a week.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I was very upset because this was a young German couple. A young Jewish couple with a baby.
You don't.
That will kill you.
What doesn't kill you makes you
mm-hmm.
German.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, it was a young Jewish couple with a baby, and I had no idea what babysitting meant.
Mm-hmm.
But every other night or so, they said, are you all staying home? And yes, I was staying home. What should I do?
Right.
I didn't know what to do. They went to the movies, and I babysat for nothing. $10, and I had to go to Macy's to buy a little thing with drawers because all they had was a much better job. I think it paid $46 a week instead of $32, and that was again,
wow.
And that was again for my languages, and that was importing cheese from Switzerland.
I'm working in
I'm
New
working.
York,
mm-hmm.
And
I'm going to take a dance class or whatever you want to call it. Every night after work. I have no kitchen facilities. I have orange juice, coffee, and a donut yuck for at meetings every morning before I go upstairs. I skip lunch. I take a class every night on West 42nd Street after work. Then I take the subway home. And have dinner in some coffee shop at the counter, which usually consisted of half a melon with ice cream.
Wow.
I remember. And the neighborhood I lived in was perfectly fine, except for where the subway stopped and the melon was. Some of my friends said, you can't be there. I was between West End and Broadway, on 147th or 145th Street or something like that. The subway stopped at 145th, I think. And, of course, where I had my dinner was on Broadway, and they didn't think it was safe enough, but nothing ever happened to me.
And so now tell us when you met your husband.
Oh, my husband. I mean, by then my parents were here, and I lived with them, and we lived in Astoria. It wasn't the place to live yet, Astoria, which it is now. But I don't know how we ever got there, who told us to move there. And I moved in with them in a brand new semi-attached house. The owners lived downstairs. We lived on the second floor. In the back of us was all still ready to be built.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the cockroaches, were absolutely rampant. Only, I must say, in the bathroom, nowhere else. And we had exterminator after exterminator, but in the bathroom in the evening when you came in, you turned on the lights and there they were in the sink. They were not in the kitchen, only there. And they came somehow from the bath. That was awful, just awful. So I lived with them, and my husband, I had a friend from Germany, not even a very good friend, because she was a year older. And she asked me to come to meet her future husband. She lived with her parents in Kew Gardens, and the future husband she had met, and we should come and meet him on a Sunday afternoon. And I said, I remember to my mother, I really don't feel like going there. To go from Astoria to Kew Gardens, I don't know whether you know the neighborhood, I think you needed two buses. And on a Sunday afternoon, you probably waited half an hour for each. I mean, it was no pleasure. But my mother said, yes, go, go, like mothers do. You meet people and blah, blah, blah. And I went and I go and it was not a party. There were eight people in the living room, at your parents' living room, and there was a cake and coffee. I mean, it was really nothing fancy. But I knew her and everybody there I knew except for one guy. And I didn't pay much attention to him, but as the afternoon went on, and somehow it developed, or I heard that he has a car. Nobody I knew had a car. And when it came to going home, and I was thinking of those two buses back,
that was very
and
good.
He said, I don't know what he said, can I take you home, or can I give a lift to somebody? And I said, yes.
Had a girl.
Yes. So that.
So remember, if a guy says to you, can I give you a ride, first you say, hold on, I have to call Aunt Julie.
It was a green Mercury.
A green Mercury. So how long did you go out and date before you knew he was the one, first of all?
I didn't know for quite a while. But he was so, I always said to my mother when I came home, he is such a faker. He can't know all the things he
because
claims
to
know. Because if one night we talk about ballet, I mean, he knew, why would a young man know about ballet? He knew the names and the choreographer and of everything. Another time
he
we talk about, another day talk about music. Mm-hmm. Every conductor, he knows this opera from that concert. It
he lived
matter.
With Leonard Bernstein.
It didn't matter what we were talking about, as if he had read everything about it ahead of time.
Isn't that great? Mm-hmm.
That's
is wonderful.
And that's how he was.
Yeah, that, well, that's
because
okay,
of that.
Yeah, sure. So now, what was his occupation?
At that time,
yeah.
He was working in an office. No, it was his own office already. Yeah, it was already his own office. When he was discharged from the army, he got a job with some other German Jewish somebody who was a bit older and had an import-export business, which he learned there, and he learned quickly. And so he said to himself, and I didn't know him yet then, I can do that too. And so he opened a little office and started making calls. And I said, well, how did you get what they wanted? Well, he was importing and rather exporting and importing everything. If somebody asked for a refrigerator, he took the yellow pages and he found a refrigerator that one could buy and send it to, I don't know, South America or wherever.
Wherever. Yeah.
That was his business. And it went.
Okay. Now, did you, because my niece here is a dancer, did you pursue dancing?
Yes, I pursued it here.
Yes, okay.
But I eventually stopped the dancing when I got older and my friends got older, and I have been teaching not dancing but exercise, which I do every morning now. Of course, it reverted to something very different for elderly people. Mm-hmm. I do a class every morning at this church there where I rent a nice big room, and I get them through their paces. At a quarter of eight every morning. And then somebody will ask me, well, how can you do that? Where do they hold on? I said, if they have to hold on, there's a wall or a chair. How do they lie down? I mean, do you da-da-da-da? Of course they lie down. How? They go down and they lie down and they have a mat and then they can get up again and they don't need me or a chair. If they keep doing it,
right. They
can do it.
Do it, sure.
And it is really amazing. You should see that sometimes. I mean, I have people in their 80s, but I also have people in their 60s, mm-hmm. and there is no, none of that.
You know, it's funny because I would take this class if you started at, say, 10 or 11.
Well, you know, it's funny. Everybody, the reason I started early is that the church there that rents me the space, and it's expensive, wow. They run a nursery school, like every church does.
Oh, okay.
Sure,
and by
sure.
9:30 sharp, I have to be out.
You have to be out, to right.
And I do a 1.5 hour class, not a 1 hour.
That's amazing. That is great.
And the people at first said, no way. I mean, there's still a lot of people who say, no, I'm sorry, I can't come because you don't have that early time. But the people who do come said, wonderful, I have a whole day.
Day to do other things, right.
It's true. It is. That is wonderful.
So that works perfectly well, and I go there 5 days a week, mm-hmm. and it keeps me.
And
going.
You mentioned that you have. Right. You mentioned you had two children.
Four. You had four children.
When were they all born?
52, 53, 55, and 61. He was a mistake. I mean, not a mistake.
I love it.
Surprise.
Greg.
So now, do his siblings ever say...
No.
No, of course not.
He's now in his 50s. Come right. on.
That's amazing.
That's why they would say it, because it's funny now.
He was a baby. He was totally neglected. I mean, he was so neglected that he really grew up on his own perfectly well, without any interference. No, mm-hmm. I'm kidding. But the other three were so close together.
Sure.
And, by right. the, and then there were those 6 years, and by the time he was one or two or whatever, the others had to go to music lessons, to
right.
library,
so really
to this and this.
Sure.
And it didn't matter what the baby was doing, pick him up, throw
he
him
just
in, the
goes
car.
In the car.
And he did it. You know, he was just...
So is it two boys, two girls?
No, not that lucky.
Not that lucky.
Girl, boy, boy, boy.
Girl. So the oldest is a girl.
And she always felt sorry for herself that she didn't have a sister. And that they had, the four
have,
of them had
she has a sister.
Are you happy you have a sister?
She has a younger sister.
Or do you wish you had a brother?
No, she doesn't have a brother, but she has a younger sister.
I said, does she wish she had a brother?
No, they're very close.
And what are they doing now?
Okay. My daughter...
And do any of them live nearby?
One did, and wished he did again. I'll come to them. My daughter is the oldest. She lives in Pennsylvania. She is, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to take it, divorced. She has a 29-year-old son who is my grandson, genius. I mean, he does with computers.
Was he the one that took Mandarin, or was that a different grandson?
No, that's a much younger one.
Okay.
That one is 29 years old, and he has had the same job now, I think, for 6 years. He went to Yale. He is an electrical engineer. He is totally normal otherwise. But
totally
he does things that particular outfit needed and waited for to find somebody. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me what it is. And they found him, and they hired him before he graduated. And then he went right to California, and he hasn't been ever since there, but he works for them. He happens now to live in Riverdale because it's where his girlfriend is and works, and they don't care where he is as long as it's the United States.
Right.
And he spends all his day this way and that way. Mm-hmm. And he talks to India and to China and to whoever. And he is such a good kid, 29. They lived here for about 6 years.
Some of my former students who were in their 50s are kids to me also.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. And he and his girlfriend have lived here for, I mean, on and off, but once a stretch of about 6 weeks while they were trying to find a place to stay. And I have a study over there that's small and has a door. And honest to goodness, he was there 8 hours every day. Nobody was allowed to disturb him. Nobody was for lunch. He mm-hmm. quit. He takes it totally seriously.
Right.
And if I have to call him because I'm stuck, I mean, I have many other people to ask when I'm stuck with my computer. I know not to call him during the day, but he will take my call and say, sorry, Grandma, can't do it now. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know.
Really did.
When they got the apartment in Riverdale, it was so funny. They lived here. And he came home and he said, we take that apartment. It's very good. It has everything we need. And I first have to paint what used to be the baby's room and has, I don't know, pink walls or blue walls. Mm-hmm. I have to first paint it because it has to look like an office.
Right. And your oldest son?
My oldest son lives in the city and has two children. That's the one
who takes the
English.
Mm-hmm.
Where does he go to school?
Bolton. They go both. He has the older sister is going to be a senior in high school. My son looks young, acts young, but he is the oldest, and the second, and he is now 63, I think, born 50.
Born 53, so
born
he's 62.
62.
62.
Right, whatever he is, but he looks
your
20
daughter
years
and
younger.
I, your daughter and
that's
I are
right.
the same
he's
age.
The oldest. Yeah. Oh, well, he is.
And they're all kids to me.
Yeah, but now he's a very. He can do everything. I mean, he's like amazing, and mm-hmm. he's very good looking. He has it all, and he has a good work, good play, mm-hmm. good wife, two kids.
Perfect.
Works very hard, plays very hard.
Mm-hmm. And the two youngest?
Michael worked for 8 years in Holland, uh-huh. and was transferred back to here. He never worked here before. They didn't have an office here. It's a Dutch firm, and he worked for them for 8 years, learned Dutch. And they took him mainly because he had no idea of what they traded in oil and grains. They still do, a very, very large mm-hmm. European mm-hmm. firm. Mm-hmm. And they like to train their people. They like to have people with brains and foreign languages. And he knew French, German, and English, not Dutch, which he learned there. And they like to train them from way down at the bottom. First they have to learn right. what this grain is and that grain, and then this industrial oil and that industrial oil, and that's how they do it, like it used to be when my father was.
Sure.
Right,
you know.
Right.
And he got a job, and he lived there, and he bought an apartment, and he had millions of friends, and then they transferred him here. There wasn't even an office here yet. He opened it. And after a while, he didn't want to do it anymore. And he's on his own doing the same type of thing. But yeah. And he kept his apartment, which he is either renting or not renting. And whenever he has time, he goes to Holland and he spends time there and says if he could, he would live there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He fell in love with Holland. He speaks Dutch, mm-hmm. French, the worst was German. Terrible accent. And okay, that's number
and the youngest
son number two.
The youngest?
The youngest son, Danny. Danny is a computer. What he does on the computer, I have no idea. He helps he does for other people. When he was finished in college, he didn't know anything about computers except what he knew and mm-hmm. got to learn the library or something. Mm-hmm. And he decided that I want to do something with computers. And he moved back home into the basement where is a room. He didn't want to go back into his own room. He bought, no, there was a, by then my husband had died. My husband had a heart attack on Madison Avenue and died right there.
What year?
What year? 66. No, what am I saying? 88, I'm all confused. He was 66, and
oh,
it was
1988.
Right. So he was born in 22, and you were born in 23.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And he was almost 65, but not yet quite, and I was teaching at that time also in the evening. I had classes, and I came home on a Thursday evening in January, and it was bitter cold, and after a while the phone rings around 9:30, and the voice says, I'm sorry, there was nothing we could do for him. I think you must have a wrong number. And it was some doctor at what's it, on Columbus Circle, the Yas Hospital, Lennox, whatever it's called now. On Columbus Circle in the city, big hospital.
Lennox,
I forget. That's not
Lennox Hill. Is it Roosevelt? Well, yeah, it's not called that anymore, but
yeah.
It used to be Roosevelt something.
Right,
yeah,
I, yeah.
Roosevelt, okay. Exactly.
Everything now is probably Columbia Presbyterian.
Yeah, something like
they
that.
Took over all the different hospitals.
And he said, there's nothing we can do. The doctor said, I need to know within 15 minutes whether you want an
autopsy.
Yes, autopsy or not. And I almost said to him, are you kidding me? So at 10 o'clock at night, I called my doctor here, who was also my husband's doctor. I didn't wake him up. I explained to him what the situation was, and he said, you couldn't care less what he died of. He died of a heart attack.
Right.
So tell the guy, heart attack.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then I called the rabbi, but that was, I think, only the next day. And what should I do now? And he said, I know of a very good
funeral home.
Yes, mm-hmm. And they're very decent and very nice and blah, 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 and you don't need anything Jewish when you don't want to, which I knew my husband didn't want, so that all went normal. And I knew right then and there that in the long run, or even in the short long run, it's better to die that way
mm-hmm.
than of cancer or something.
Or something like that.
But
that's how my father died.
Very soon. He was...
And it's a better way to go than my mother died.
There's no doubt
exactly.
about it. It's the best way to
you're
go.
Right. You're right.
He was... It was such a strange thing. He always took the train to the city unless he had something to do early in the morning somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that day he left and he said, I'm driving in because I'm going to the dentist before I go to the office. It was his office. Mm-hmm. He could do what he wanted. Dentist was on the west side, he's on 72nd Street, and so, okay, so he went to the dentist. And then he called during the day and said, I'll come in late, but he did that a lot of time. I'm going to an opening. He was art historian. Okay, so he knew everything, every new gallery that had, so he went. So I didn't wait for him when I came home late.
Right,
sure.
Right, of course, it didn't make me anything, sure.
And he drove up from his office downtown, and he drove up Madison Avenue, it's very interesting, Madison Avenue, and he knew of a garage where you could park on 56th Street. Up Madison Avenue, make a right on 56th Street, there's a garage. I think it's still there. Which he did. And there's a sign, I saw it afterwards, there's a sign which I think overhead, small sign, that from, let's say, between 5 and 8, you cannot make a right turn onto 56th Street of Madison Avenue. He made the right turn. Knowing my husband, he knew about it. But he made it anyway. And there's right there the garage. And he got his ticket from the, you know, to pick up his car again on his way down when he hit the street, he collapsed.
Hmm.
Had a heart attack. It's a good way to die.
You know, we all have to die.
Yeah. It's a good way.
And it's a good way, just a little too early.
Just a little too early.
Much too early.
Man.
And I found out afterwards that while I was still out teaching, excuse me, the local Briarcliff police, a policeman came to the door, rang the bell, but I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
To tell me about it.
Well, that's good.